This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest, and this is the podcast for October 4th.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back. Well, today we're going to talk technology, and we haven't talked about technology for quite a while.
Yeah, we had a podcast late last year, probably more than a year ago
at this
point.
Wow, it's been that long?
Yeah. So lots going on in that space.
A lot is an understatement. Technology is ubiquitous, including in the oil and gas and energy business. And we're delighted to have another special guest this week, Alberta's own David Smethurst. David grew up in Red Deer, but is now on the global stage. He's the chief technology officer of a multinational, Hitachi Vantara, which is based out of Santa Clara. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
All right, so today with David, we're planning to cover three areas: the state of data science in various industries around the world, what's going on specifically within the oil and gas, and because of your global role, you get to see a lot of what's happening in the world. And we'd be very interested in your views, finally, on what's going on in Canada and how that may compare to what you see in other places.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, before we start, David, I think the audience would be really interested to know how a Red Deer guy grew up here and ended up being the chief technology officer of a huge multinational.
Sure, Peter. It's actually a really simple story. You know, you leave Red Deer, you go to the big city called Calgary, you go to school, you study engineering, and you think, hey, that's the way to go. Then you end up taking on your own businesses for 20 years. You learn a lot about technology, about engineering, operations, automation. And then you get tapped on the shoulder by a really big company that says, we want to go from IT to OT. So operations technology. So it was whirlwind. I worked for a company called Vantara. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. In my mind, Hitachi made microwaves and backhoes, you know, coming from Alberta.
That's what I thought.
So 2 years later, I now know that it's 900 plus companies. It's my Lego set where I can pull as much technology. They do manufacturing, they build hospitals, they build power plants, and a lot of technology. As a matter of fact, Hitachi has the most amount of patents in technology than any other company. So Vantara, based out of Santa Clara, was actually created 2 years ago. And it brought in the data side, the analytics side, really the whole topic of IoT, AI, and big data.
Okay, so let's talk about the state of data science more broadly. So
sure.
You get to see a lot more than and many of us in the Canadian market. So when you look at the manufacturing industries in general, what's happening with data science, you know, and compared to maybe what you saw 2-3 years ago?
Sure. So if you look at the history, first of all, of SCADA data, capturing field data capture or doing field data, it was actually borrowed. PLC programming was from the auto industry.
So this PLC is programmable logic control.
Right.
This is the how you gather and sense what's going on a manufacturing line?
Absolutely right. So when you think we've already invested in that many years ago in the industry, so then there's this aha moment where we now realize that manufacturing have automated a lot of their processes. So we, and even in my role today, we take that context. We have manufacturing insight and other areas in the digital side, and we bring that into oil and gas.
So broadly around the world, there's different kind of manufacturers. There's autos, there's food, there's all sorts of different things. Like just before we get to the oil and gas business, give us the state of the union. Like, as Jackie's sort of alluded, like what's happened in the last 3 years? What's the big technological change, step change that's been going on?
I'd say the biggest step change that I'm seeing is that people realize they have a lot of data and that the analytics is probably top of mind.
Right. And they have a lot of data because of things like the Internet of Things, which sensor costs coming down.
Yes. Well, and a lot of data because data has taken different shapes. It's now pictures. It's now, and it could come from so many other sources. You look at EDR data from a drilling point of view. Like they are collecting a lot of data.
Right.
But the biggest challenge was to ingest that data to do the analytics. Mm-hmm. Right. So now that analytics is becoming a reality, the insight has grown exponentially.
Right.
So even though they're using terms big data, that's what they mean. The challenge we see that has been ubiquitous is they want an IoT, they want to increase that data for insight, but they don't have a very strong existing data to be able to monetize that. And eventually, as everyone knows who's in the digital oil field, getting to a level of automation is a driver.
Right.
So in the last 3 years, that's been the biggest change.
Right. And it strikes me that certainly the auto industry, let's just use that as an example that you're familiar with, has been able to gather way more data on their assembly lines and the robotics and everything else, then feed that into higher speed computing yes. horsepower, connectivity.
Predictive
stuff.
Failures.
To predict failures, expand reliability,
right.
improve reliability, and drive down costs.
And improve quality.
And improve quality.
Right.
Okay. So that's the auto business.
Mm-hmm.
What other industries do you see that have improved to that extent?
Well, other industries besides auto is, and you've mentioned it already, Peter, like when you look at the food production, anything that requires production optimization,
mm-hmm.
that's where they're benefiting from.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I was told at a meeting yesterday that a factory that actually builds trailers went from 30 people to 3.
Whoa.
And that factory and their level of output, because they get orders and the orders shift
yeah.
at different times, but they can wind up the assembly or wind it down.
Right.
And their productivity is way up, as is the quality.
Right. Well, we'll talk about what the 27 other people do in a different program.
yeah. Is that mainly robotics? That it was obviously
yeah,
robotics.
Part of it is robotics.
Yeah.
It's a machine, basically. You feed in the plan and, yeah, a series of robotics, bend, do all the things.
This is for making
yeah.
RVs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, let's talk about data science in oil and gas globally. What are the big things that are happening internationally if you think about what was going on again that same time period 2-3 years ago versus today?
Right. Well, data science is truly a science. And one of the examples I like to use where the industry is actually exploring ideas. So, you know, there's the one end of science in the G&G world, the geophysical and geological world. That science in interpretation and understanding what's in the subsurface has been going for a while. It's the operational data science. So from end to end, whether you're upstream or midstream or even downstream, that's the data science that is becoming more important because they're trying to reduce costs.
Right.
So reduced costs can come in the form of being able to report better and more accurately or predict failures or when you're having a shutdown, that your shutdown could be better managed if the data that gives you that information.
And what about, you talked about the G&G world. You hear stories that AI is finding oil that human eyes missed.
Right.
Is that really happening out there or is that still very early stage?
Well, the reason I kind of look up when I see stuff like that, I attend a lot of conferences. And in these conferences, I see a lot of great ideas that are presented well. And the degree of accuracy, because if you understand, AI is really a lot more data with great analytics. And I know we're pretty close to doing stuff like that, but it's being able to manage that kind of data and get to that level. We still rely on people's competency to know the subsurface well, along with technology. Not
okay.
to say it's not happening, but I haven't seen a lot of it.
You've seen more application in the
right.
kind of reducing costs, improving
right.
operations, predicting
so supply
downtime.
Chain, blockchain. You
yep.
see, a lot of these things have become real. As I often will tell people, the technology's there,
mm-hmm.
understanding how to use it. So we use this term called edge to outcome, where we capture the data and where we address the use case or business outcome.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute, because I view data, information to knowledge, knowledge to analysis,
yes.
analysis to decision as sort of an information manufacturing
right.
conveyor belt.
Right.
right. I mean, data is just a string of numbers,
right.
which are meaningless unless you turn them. Well, you first scrub them, merge them with other data that you have and turn it into something called information, which
right.
I can look at. Then I turn it into knowledge by thinking about it and analyze it. And then we can get to artificial intelligence, all that. Where is the biggest bottleneck that you see in this? Is it up front and because there's just a flood of data? And
yes,
the data
it is up front. As to say, we have this little bet. There's a fellow that travels with me quite a bit and he's an enterprise architect. And we start a conversation often with senior guys in finance and operations. And we'll walk them through edge to outcome. No big slide deck. This is a business conversation. And they will say, okay, so what would it look like for us now to go from edge to outcome? We said, well, first of all, we'll need this type of data. So there is always an IT person in the room. And they'll say, well, actually, we do have a data management problem first. We don't have access to that data.
Mm-hmm.
So the senior guys do have a vision around increasing the amount of insight as well as the level of automation, but that's always what stops. So you'll often hear companies like ours say, oh, we're going to do a POC, a proof of concept. We actually say proof of value, a POV, because we already have the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the traditional use cases are in upstream, midstream, and downstream, and then we do it in incremental improvements. So we have often used the term, your operations improvement plan really should be your digital transformation plan as you go from analog to digital.
Tell us about where this stuff is being dominantly applied globally in oil and gas. Is it offshore? Is it onshore? Where is it? Big companies? What countries? Where is the big change happening?
Well, I should back up for a second. As a global CTO for energy, it's primarily oil and gas, it's power and utilities, and water management, and to some degree mining, because they all have the same issues. And so I'm meeting with countries, ministries of energy. If you think of a movie and you think of this group of people on one side of the table with interpreters and another group and myself in the middle, trying to understand, they're trying to modernize their infrastructure. They'll often have a national oil company as one of their owned companies, along with a power and utilities infrastructure that needs that kind of help. So that's one area. The super majors we were working with them today in some very big data scenarios, but we're also taking our smart spaces and applying that to those areas. So I want to make sure anybody listening to this is it's also one to many, because technology now can be done as a service. As a matter of fact, we're doing a project where we are providing a smart space on drilling rigs as a service.
Smart space is?
A smart space is you look at video surveillance analytics, you look at LIDAR, digital twins, and now you're actually able to improve their activity, reduce safety incidents.
Right.
You're now, this is where I say the data shape is changing.
So, I mean, there's a lot of jargon there. I think we can just sort of simplify it to the world of manufacturing stuff, whether it's barrels of oil or automobiles, is going from, you know, merely touch, smell, feel. Give us some numbers. I mean, for industries that have been transformed or businesses, like how much are they reducing their costs? You gave us this RV example, but I mean, like—
That's a very interesting area, because even to look at numbers of cost is very difficult to measure. What they measure is time often, right? So look at a drilling rig. If they're able to reduce the number of days, that monetizes in its own way, reduce the number of incidents. So I'm just using that as an example. In manufacturing, well, I'll use another example. The control process for a pipeline to come back up and running, there is actually an application that was developed here in Calgary. And, you know, they can bring that through AI, so now software versus manual control process, 40% faster, which means millions of dollars to a pipeline company. Mm-hmm. We integrate with stuff like that.
Right.
So there are, you know, I'm not avoiding the question. I just know that even when I see real numbers based on what they're doing as business outcomes, it's hard to do, because even though we develop hydrocarbons all over the world, the real part is reducing risks, and those eventually add up to numbers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, another, you talked about when you meet with people, it's often the finance and the operations people. And so, you know, you hear predictions that the finance department in oil and gas industries is going to be a tiny fraction of what it is today because of these technologies.
Yes.
I guess you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. But where finance is really interested in, and the boards that are part of those companies, they want to know that the data that they're making decisions on and reporting, especially in a public domain and in a regulated environment, that they're accurate. Because we have conversations where we are looking, giving them a whole new insight in some data they've given us. And I'm not saying financial data is way off, but we know as an industry, measuring BOE or et cetera, even flow and pressure, is plus or minus. But as analytics improve, as real-time data gets captured, that improves.
Right. And that whole system we have of production accounting people, and then giving that to the financial people. And so there's a lot of room for opportunity there. And so where are companies globally on that? Is that something that's yet to come, but we're seeing it in other industries and pulling that in, or is it pretty advanced?
Well, it's interesting. So I have a counterpart that's in the finance side. So one based out of New York, one based out of London. We compare notes all the time because the financial industry, so you think of stock exchanges, banks, et cetera, they've had to look at that closer, scrutinize that even more as a regulated industry. We're borrowing that level of scrutiny and applying it, like I say in my world, to the oil and gas business, right? Again, it's better, the question that I used to get all the time when operating and having our own businesses, where have you done that before, was always the question, or why would I even do that? I can't understand how that would show up in my P&L. Well, now I can go and say, I can show you the architecture of what it is, but I can tell you more of the use case and the level, a degree of information we can provide. And you reference it to a finance person in oil and gas that looks just like it could be in a in New York or in a financial market.
You talked a lot about organizations, whether it's at the state level or the big corporate level, that is embracing this stuff. Talk about the ones that are not. I mean, I always think or know in a disrupted industry that there bifurcates into two. Those are sort of the progressive ones that adopt the technology, and then there's the ones that are in denial that are more laggard. How can you characterize that?
Well, the laggards are still there. As I say, what is really quite positive here recently, I'm meeting with companies. So I, you know, again, grew up here, played hockey here. So you know a lot of people running these companies. I actually have a meeting this week where it's let's just say it's like 20,000 BOE. So they might have 2,600 wells, whatever, 100 people. It's kind of one of those, we have a few of those kind of companies here in the city. They're now financed often by private equity. Those private equity firms want that company to operate better at 100 people, make more acquisitions, and then continue to operate with it, that going from analog to digital. So it's not about just the big players. It's not just about...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
But do you want to move over into the Canadian sphere?
That is Canadian.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so what I'm talking about, that is local. So I'll say to everybody, Canadian first, often even though I'm the only Canadian at many of the meetings, I take a lot of what I learned in Western Canada. As a matter of fact, we know that people have invested in this part of the world for many years for not only our hydrocarbons, but our technology. A lot of it was developed here in Calgary, between Calgary and Houston. We look at drilling software and a lot of other applications. So here, we, even though we have a really good understanding of what the technology is, we have not taken advantage of that. And a lot of it because of the cost. And if it's a brownfield versus a greenfield, well, that's starting to change. As sensor costs go down, the understanding of when you want to monetize a new well or you get more information in the subsurface. When you look at the fields in the U.S., you know, where they've gone back and look at what's happening today.
Yeah, I was reading about some of BP going back into some older fields in the U.S. and using this technology, able to increase their production level and reduce their costs at the same time, reduce their methane emissions. So do we have examples like that in Canada? You're saying not quite there.
No, we're definitely on our way there for sure. Obviously, without getting into the political side, you know, I would love to see more optimism. As a matter of fact, you know, the World Petroleum Congress is going to be here in 2023. And what's really interesting, I'm on that board and really interested to see what we're talking about today, advancing the digital side, which some recent conversations overseas as well as in the U.S., the next 5 years will be the most dramatic change when it comes to technology for oil and gas.
In Canada or globally?
That will include Canada. It has to be. Some of it's demographic based. Some of it's the way we are financing our operations. And as I say, we go from a CapEx to an OpEx model of technology. Suddenly, things become more affordable and easier to manage, right?
Well, that's a good point. And it's not unique to Canada, but oil and gas companies that are publicly traded are under more and more pressure to take that cash flow and put it back to their investors.
Right.
And so do you feel like that is going to result in less investment in some of this technology because there's so much pressure to put that capital back into investors' hands, not into improving operations?
Well, I think if they can measure better, they can manage better. So if they're measuring better and they're now going from a CapEx to an OpEx model, like I was mentioning earlier, now they look at amortizing any kind of expense over time. So they actually have that money. So when they're measuring the peaks and valleys better and their available money back to their shareholders will improve.
Right. Well, and I think great point about CapEx versus OpEx. If you can reduce your operating costs, I'm just throwing a number since you wouldn't give me one, let's say 10, 20, 30%. I've heard ranges like that. Yeah. That is all now new cash flow that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Absolutely.
It's like the new source of capital. There is no capital to this industry. The only source is to squeeze down your costs and generate more cash flow within your company.
Absolutely.
And grow your profits instead of growing your production.
Yeah. So my gut feel is that this current environment should result in more innovation and spending in this area.
Right.
Well, it should. But I want to come back to this notion of where are we in Canada relative to, say, the United States and the world, number one. And number two, does size matter? Can the smaller companies, I mean, you gave us a 20,000 BOE.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with that, the size? Does size matter?
So first of all, I would say the U.S. is ahead because they've just been busier. They've been flat out. There are certain companies in Texas, in Oklahoma that we work with often, they are quite progressive.
So what size are they? Big independents?
So they could be 100,000 plus, right? And then we're starting to see a trend, especially in the last 6 months here, mm-hmm. where I'm able to explain to people what I've been doing. Because often I get asked, why did I ever join Hitachi? You mm-hmm. know, what does it have to do with that? And so as I explain, again, a different approach, an ability to do it incrementally, it's more palatable, right? So now they're understanding, we're not just talking, but we don't really talk about AI and all these things. It's a destination, a use case. So it's improving in Canada. But we have to get, I know the recent executive omens, a real concern about our industry. And so, well, let's not worry about the problems. What are the solutions?
So the solutions are important. But I want to come back to this idea. There's a lot of, say, 10,000, sub 10,000 barrel a day
yeah.
companies
yeah.
that are, you know, in trouble because yes. of the, you know, dollars per BOE, whether yeah. it's the G&A. Or other expenses are just too high to
and
be able to compete.
And to have the staff to even do the windshield time.
So, you know, the question is, can they use this technology as effectively as larger companies?
I would say yes.
Okay, so we've reached yeah. that point.
We have reached that point.
I think it went like a year or two ago.
Because we have smaller tech companies here in Alberta that are actually okay. being able to provide a service or a okay. solution at a reasonable price.
Okay, so the technology costs, the adoptability, is here for a spectrum of companies of size.
Yes.
I'll come back to the question about the social side, the corporate culture side. Mm-hmm. Are these companies open to changing? Do you see bifurcation? Like what is the culture of adoption?
Well, it's difficult. You know what? Digital transformation is difficult, but more importantly, it's always been a concern that jobs will be replaced, right? You'll go from, I know that I've seen business plans where operationally, they want to go from, say, 10 people to 5 to whatever, right? And this depends, like, if it's a site, if it's whatever. But what it's been interesting, though, we also see this side of the retraining, because you have two things. You have demographics mm-hmm. where people are leaving. Someone gave me a crazy number. I don't know what year it is, that in Canada, for instance, there'll be more people retired than there will be working. And so when you look at the level of automation that has to happen and improvement for mm-hmm. our operations, and then the types of roles. So if you look at analytics, for instance, like one of my sons is doing finance and analytics in the business side, but he could join any industry, mm-hmm. right, with that type of background. We know out of the Silicon Valley, right now, a lot of Silicon Valley are going to Texas. So in the last 3 years, the amount of tech companies going to Texas, not only to do tech, but to optimize oil and gas, is exponential.
You know, it's such a gigantic global and global industry, but I'm not going to let you go on this cultural issue because, yeah. you know, it is an issue. What we've, I think, established that the oil and gas industry broadly and even here is going more to a manufacturing model
yeah.
and able to take advantage of the models that have been developed by other industries yeah. like automotive, et cetera. But that, like, even before you get to the concerns about laying people off and replacing them with a computer keyboard mm-hmm. and a screen, mm-hmm. that is even top management culturally going beyond, hey, it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. That still exists. Absolutely. You come across those things. And as a matter of fact, that part is not going to change for a while. And it's unfortunate. It's the ones that do realize that modernizing their business so they have better insight. And we're not talking about major changes now to get incremental improvement. So when you ask me, Jackie, about the numbers, you know, I've been told 3 to 5% improvement is going in the right direction because of the risks and the high reward we have in our industry. Mm-hmm. But with that, I know that people are very conscious about what will the transfer mm-hmm. of roles be. You know, it was in another conversation we had, Peter, about the crew change. You're now seeing a chief data officer. You're now seeing a chief transformation officer. With that, they're also going inside their company, recruiting a field engineer that now is learning more about automation and digitization. Like, that's actually happening here in the city.
Right. So we're right? losing jobs in some areas and gaining jobs
right.
in others.
But two things that we don't talk about is change. We talk about improvement. And the other one, which is really funny when I'm in my Silicon Valley world, I don't talk about disruptive. Because when I was running business, if someone say they're going to come and disrupt my world, well, that is not a sign of improvement. That is a sign of risk. So when we're sitting down, I talked about incremental improvement. And it's so funny. I had a fellow that was going to tell me he knew a lot more from another part of our business. I invite him to a senior management meeting and I said, look, you know, don't say some of these words. Well, he does anyway. And it was a big refinery opportunity that I was pulled into a conversation. When I said we would like to look at incremental multi-phase approach over the next 2 years. They loved it. He said, no, we can do this and do this. And they shut right down. So my point is, it is about managing expectations, because we still have senior people that go, I go to a conference, they tell me AI is the best thing. I look at my P&L and I go, how is that possible? I don't understand it. So one of the things I do, Jackie, is be a translator. Remember I mentioned IT/OT? It's the operational technology that's going to improve our business. It's not all about a point solution or a lot of the other hype that we've seen.
Right. So incremental improvements, like have more uptime,
right.
Slightly more throughput because
exactly.
You're optimizing your controllers better.
Yeah.
And better, just getting those incremental
management.
Improvements.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Chemical injections, knowing that you're not over-injecting or spending that much more money. There's so many use cases. It's amazing.
You come back to the Canada versus U.S. So I think you're saying that we are a little behind the U.S. in general.
Yes, only I would say in motivation of where we are at. If we had some momentum going right now, we would probably be at par. And why I say that is when I look at the Permian and other places, we're working with companies that are working on 10-year supply chain management. And because they see a window where they can operate their business with the price of oil being at X and know they can export it.
Okay, because that's interesting. So you're saying it's more because of the uncertainty in our business and uncertainty around future growth that's stopping us from making these investments relative to the Americans who have more visibility?
So final question before we wrap up. Is the cost of services related to all this technology, you know, if we were to engage your kind of company, is the cost going down?
The cost is going down. And the cost, it's not the best terminology, but it's sort of being more amortized. And what I mean by that is when you are bringing components or solutions or products to make a solution, because a solution in my world is not one piece.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're bringing that, and as I say, we're forcing more the issue as a service. So now it's a monthly cost that's managed. It's kind of like buying a house. You do a mortgage. It's the same kind of idea. But that cost now from a technology point of view, and as I say, I pull technologies from other parts of our company. So we actually have a sensor company that makes sensors. So we use that. We have a video analytics company. We can bring all these pieces together and make that a manageable cost and a competitive cost.
Good. Well, you know, we're running out of time here. We really appreciate your thoughts and your perspective, your global perspective on the oil industry here. Can you tell us your contact info in case someone in our audience would like to reach out to you to learn more?
Sure. It's david.smethurst@hitachivantara.com. And I'd love to hear from you. And I'm definitely available. Now, just depending on the time zone, I'll respond as soon as I can.
Kids. All right. Well, thanks for joining our podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.